offering our most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of the Afternoon Satsang. This is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and today Arvind is not with me. So I am going to be playing an earlier episode for all of you to enjoy. This was an episode that we did on the essence of Christmas, the spirit of Christmas, as we've learned from Swami. Today is the eve of Christmas, a day that we've seen being celebrated beautifully in Prashanthi Nilayam over the years, in the past so many years. The 24th of December was the day on which the main choir presentation would be made by devotees from overseas. On the morning of Christmas, we would have the carols by the students, and sometimes in the evening of 25th or on 26th, we would have the special children's choir. We would have the drama by the country that's hosting the Christmas celebrations. But much of that is not happening today, this year, in Prashanthi Nilayam. But many of those celebrations are going to be online. So one thing is, we invite you to join us in the live satsang that we're going to have today in the evening at 7:30 p.m. We're going to have a special talk as part of the Christmas Eve celebrations. We're going to have a talk by Mr. William Miller. The regular listeners of Radio Sai must have heard him before. We've had him on our programs before. We've had an extended series of talks, conversations with him on video, I think last year or sometime before that. So he is going to be the guest speaker for this evening satsang. That will be at 7:30. Tomorrow we do have live broadcast from the Sai Kulwant Hall. The Prashanthi Mandir group is going to be singing a few songs to mark the Christmas celebrations from here. We don't have the students participating this time because most of the classes, as you all know, have been happening online. So it's going to be a different kind of a Christmas celebrations. But I believe that there are many online programs being initiated by the Shri Satya Sai International Organization. So we would suggest that you can go and visit their website, SSIO. They have their programs being streamed through that. We will also be joining and participating and watching all of those programs. They've been working over many, many months to put together a program online for Christmas. So do join in and soak in the Christmas festivity online this time. So without much ado, I'm going to play for you this afternoon satsang. It's a rebroadcast file. It was done sometime in 2014, if I'm not wrong. Anyway, the announcement, which you will hear shortly, will have the exact date on which we had first done the satsang. Hope you'll enjoy, even as we recollect some of the points that we shared. The message is eternal. We are just repeating it again for this Christmas. We will meet you next week as part of Afternoon Satsang. It's going to be the last Afternoon Satsang for 2020, a year which was quite interesting, to put it mildly. And we had a lot of lessons that we learned through this year. We will be talking about that. Arvind and I will be back here on the 31st of December for that satsang. For now, I'm going to replay this afternoon satsang that we had done on the spirit of Christmas. On the other side of it, you will be joined by Ganesh for the program Veda Jignasa. That will be followed by the Telugu segment, which will be followed by the segment Love to Love. Over now to that satsang that we did a couple of years back. Hope you enjoy it. Till we meet you next time, keep safe, take care. Jai Sai Ram.
Dear listeners, Sai Ram. Welcome to our radio series, Afternoon Satsang. This is a discussion between Radio Sai's Prem and Arvind on different spiritual topics. Every Thursday on Asia Stream, you can enjoy this live conversation. It's from 12:30 p.m. to 2 p.m. Indian Standard Time. Today's episode was first featured as part of Thursday Live on 25th December 2014.
Sairam, dear listeners, Christmas is a time of great joy, great celebration, smiles and colors all around. It's a fantastic time to be in Prashanti during this time of the year. Joining me as always for this afternoon satsang is Brother Prem. And we begin placing our humble gratitude at the lotus feet of our dear Swami. Sairam Prem.
Sairam Arvind, Christmas, it's one of those special days which is celebrated all around the globe. And it's a festive season, you know, starts with Christmas and leading on to the new year. So it's a wonderful time of the year when we all are celebrating together. So it is indeed a beautiful point in time to stop and have a satsang. To have a satsang is always good all the time, anytime. But in a time when we are all celebrating, it gives us even more reason to look back at the reason for the celebration. And as Swami would say, the spirit behind the festival is more important than the festivity the festival is made up of.
Exactly, Prem. And even before we go into the spirit behind the festival, as you said, it is a time for joy. It is time for a satsang. What better way to begin the satsang than with thoughts of our dear Swami? For me, Prem, personally, Christmas has been very, very special because it was the only day in the year when we were assured of seeing Bhagwan during the Brahma Muhurtam.
Okay.
You know, the time from 4 a.m. is considered as the Brahma Muhurtam.
Right.
And literally sometimes we could even see Swami even before the Brahma Muhurtam. Because, you know, when I joined as a student, Swami had shifted to the residence in Purnachandra auditorium. And therefore, in order to grant the darshan from the balcony with the silver doors, this famous silver door darshan, Bhagwan would glide across the Kulwant Hall from the Purnachandra auditorium, and Swami would do this at something like, sometimes at 2:30, sometimes at 3 in the morning, and there would be nobody in the Kulwant Hall. Only a few people who are aware of this practice will be trying to be on a lookout, but nobody can predict Swami. And Swami says, love my unpredictability, love my uncertainty. Everyone will be gathering for the carol singing with the candlelight procession, which will begin at about 5 o'clock in the morning. But Swami would have walked in, and then, so that is one beautiful darshan we can all enjoy. There's no darshan music, there's nothing, absolute stillness. You know, it was like the carol that we heard, silent night, holy night, all was calm, all was bright. It would be bright with light, but everything would be calm, everything would be silent, and the Lord would glide in. And I think Prashanti is the only place where on Christmas, along with the spirit of Christ, we also get the spirit of the Father of Christ, because Swami would come into the balcony and he would bless the masses that had gathered below, holding candlelight and singing carols. And I remember Swami would walk to either ends of the mandir, bless everyone, and towards the end, this was the only time of the year again when everybody would get a chance to do aarti to Swami, for everyone holding a candle would turn the candle in a circular manner, waving aarti to Swami towards the end of the session, and Swami would raise his hands in benediction and blessings for all. Wow, such beautiful memories and such happy memories. This is one of the most beautiful festivals, and it is a very unique one because of the things that Swami has done on Christmas.
Very true. You know, sometimes Swami would say that any worship of the Lord has to be complete in all its forms. Especially if you see the traditional worship which we do in India, there are so many aspects to it. And I think Swami had said this sometime when he said that the worship or that celebration should cater to all your entire personality. So even if you take Christmas and Prashanti Nilayam, feast for the eyes, as you described, there is nothing to match that. Swami in that spotless white robe and everybody dressed in whites. You would have all the devotees from the overseas dressed in whites.
The ladies and gents alike.
Right, and the hall decorated in a completely different hue. It's a special, right, it's a special Christmas decoration, you know. So there is enough for the eyes to revel upon. And then the music, of course, is there for the ears. And like that, Swami would say the worship or that festival should cater to everything. And of course, how can we miss out the most important part where Swami would give the discourse and go into the inner significance of that festival. So, you know, any festival for that matter is celebrated completely in Prashanti Nilayam without, you know, giving any discount for the important message of the festival, at the same time not making any compromises on the glory or the grandeur of the festival.
when you say Bhagwan would deliver a discourse explaining the inner significance, I remember one discourse where Swami dilated upon the life of Jesus Christ,
mm-hmm.
and hearing that discourse, it becomes so evident that the life of Jesus Christ is a perfect and ideal model for each one of us to follow. And by each one of us, I don't mean just the devotees of Swami or the students or the Christians or the overseas devotees coming, not like that. For any Jivatma, any soul having taken a human birth, the life of Christ as Swami presented it in a beautiful new dimension and new light becomes an inspiration and an ideal to follow. And that is what hits me when I think of the message of Christmas. The message of Christmas is a message of our own spiritual evolution, which Swami says in a discourse begins at the time of birth when the baby starts crying. And Swami calls this crying as koham, koham. The baby is crying koham, koham, because koham translates into who am I, who am I, who am I, what am I? And the baby is crying because it does not know what it is or who it is. And Swami says this crying can stop and be replaced with joy only when you find out who you truly are. That is the purpose of life, and that is what the life of Christ shows us.
In fact, that is what Swami says. You know, you start with koham and you have to end with soham. What is soham? We'll come to much later in this discussion at least. But Swami would say that this is the journey. Then you start by asking, who am I? Who am I? And Jesus perfectly lived out that life of one who is sincerely inquiring into this matter. In fact, Swami would say that those years when Jesus was not seen, you know, that part of Jesus' story which is missing, Swami would say that that was the point where he did the inquiry and he came back into the society from where he belonged, to the society where he belonged, to give that the analysis of what Swami would say, that inquiry which he did. And that was the entire message that he lived out till the time when we, you know, he was crucified on the cross.
Even when we see from a worldly point of view, while we say that journey of our life is from finding the answer to the question, who am I, and ending with soham, even when Christ was born, he was born in such a humble dwelling. He was born in a cowshed, he was born in a manger, and there was no medical staff around to take care of him or nothing like that. In fact, at that point in time, if anybody were to say, this is Jesus, not only the baby, anybody else would have asked, Jesus who? Jesus was not known at all. I mean, who is Jesus? And even from a world point of view of the world, Jesus' life moved from who is Jesus to it is Jesus the Christ, where Christ stands for the Redeemer for one and all. And so whether from an individual perspective or from the perspective of the world, Jesus' life has begun from who am I to who, or who is Jesus, to I am the Christ or it is Jesus Christ. So it is a magnificent story, the story of Lord Jesus' life, and it gets added flavor and it gets added meaning when we look at it from the perspective that Swami has presented to us.
Absolutely, and in fact Swami would say Christmas is when you have a mass for Christ, when you pray together for Christ. It's not just merely getting together and having fun and frolic. Coming back to this thing which you asked, you know, which you started with, you said every child starts with this quest to find out who am I. And Swami would say that Jesus made three statements which were not only made in different points of time in Jesus' life, but it also describes the journey of one who sets out to know who he really is. In fact, sadly, most of the time we relate the personality or the figure of Jesus Christ only to a few of those statements which he did. And that is the similarity between the Western religions and the Eastern Oriental religions, especially what we celebrate as Vedanta or the knowledge of the Vedas. And in fact, should we start with that discourse where Swami says what are the statements that Jesus made and how they are completely and directly related to what the message of Vedas is?
Absolutely, I think so, Prem, because that message is best delivered in Swami's own voice, in Swami's own words, because we may dilute the message in, rather than dilating on it. So it's best that we listen to Swami, get the inspired answers for this question as to who am I, and then we will dilate on that.
And so, dear listeners, we're going to play for you a discourse which was delivered 1976, the Christmas of 1976 in Vrindavan. A beautiful discourse, as Arvind said, so succinctly Swami puts this message. I think we should listen to that first and we'll continue our discussion from there.
Jesus Christ, మొట్ట మొట్ట మెసెంజర్ గా వచ్చి తన దివ్యత్వాన్ని సమాజ సేవను ప్రపంచంలో సర్వపూర్ సమత్వాన్ని ఇప్పుడు తాను గుర్తించి లోకానికి చాటడం చేతనే కొంతకాలములకు ఐఎమ్ ది సన్ ఆఫ్ గాడ్ అన్నాడు. నేను భగవంతుని కుమారుణ్ణి అని రెండవ స్థాయికి ఎక్కాడు.
బికాస్ జీసస్ క్రైస్ట్ కేమ్ యాజ్ ఎ హ్యూమన్ బీయింగ్ ఇన్ టు దిస్ వరల్డ్ అండ్ హీ ఫర్ సమ్ టైమ్ ఎగ్జిబిటెడ్ అండ్ ప్రొక్లైమ్డ్ ది డివినిటీ దట్ ఈస్ ఇన్ హిమ్ అండ్ హిస్ ఆస్పెక్ట్ ఆఫ్ సర్వీస్ టు ది కమ్యూనిటీ. దీస్ వర్ ప్రొక్లైమ్డ్ బై హిమ్ ఫర్ సమ్ టైమ్. లేటర్ ఆన్ హీ ప్రొక్లైమ్డ్ హిమ్సెల్ఫ్ యాజ్ ది సన్ ఆఫ్ గాడ్.
కనుకనే నేను సన్ ఆఫ్ గాడ్ అనేటువంటి శృణ్వంతునిచ్చే అమృతస్య పుత్ర, నేను అమృత పుత్రుడు అనేటువంటి దాని స్థాయికి తాను దిగాడు.
When he said, I am the son of God, he has come to a stage when he says that he is the son of divinity, that he is immortal child, that there is immortality in him.
కాని ఆ స్థాయిలో భగవంతుడికి కుమారుడైనటువంటి బిడ్డ అయినటువంటి మానవుడు భగవంతు యొక్క గుణములు మాత్రమే కలిగి ఉండాలి. నిత్య నిర్మల నిస్వార్థమైనటువంటి ప్రేమతో సమాజ సేవను ఆచరించాలి. ఈ రకమైనటువంటి యొక్క పవిత్రమైనటువంటి కార్యము తాను చేపట్టిన తర్వాత ఐ ఎమ్ మై ఫాదర్ ఆర్ వన్ అన్నాడు.
In this stage, when he proclaimed, I am the son of God, naturally, he should have the qualities of God. The qualities of God being immortality, sacredness and purity and selflessness with which all the service which he was preaching had to be done. Having done that, having acquired the qualities of God, he then proclaimed, I and my Father are one.
Inaana manam Bhagavantuni biddalani manam cheppukuntu భగవంతుని ఆస్తిపాస్తులైనటువంటి యొక్క సత్తుల సదాచారంలో మనం దూరం పెట్టి దుర్గుణం దురాచారమైనటువంటి దానికి మనం విరుద్ధంగా వేయటం చేత మనం భగవంతుని బిడ్డలను చెప్పుకోవటప్పుడు చాలా హాస్యాస్పదంగా ఉంటుంది.
ఆన్ ది కాంట్రీ, టుడే వీ కాల్ అవర్ సెల్ఫ్ చిల్డ్రన్ ఆఫ్ గాడ్, బట్ దోస్ విచ్ ఆర్ క్వాలిటీస్ ఆఫ్ గాడ్ ఆర్ నాట్ ఇన్ అస్. వీ పుష్ అవే ఆల్ ది సీక్రెట్ క్వాలిటీస్ దట్ కమ్ ఫ్రమ్ గాడ్ టు దర్ చిల్డ్రన్ అండ్ వీ స్టిల్ కాల్ అవర్ సెల్ఫ్ చిల్డ్రన్ ఆఫ్ గాడ్.
కనుక మనం భగవంతుని బిడ్డలైనటువంటి ఇంట్లో మనం ఈ విధమైనటువంటి సార్థక నామాన్ని పొందడం చేత భగవంతుని యొక్క గుణగణాలను కూడా మనం కించిట్టైనా కూడా అభివృద్ధి గావించుకోవడానికి ప్రయత్నం చేయాలి.
Thus, calling ourselves children of God, we must make an attempt to promote such sacred qualities which we attribute to divinity.
అప్పుడే మనం బ్రహ్మణి బ్రహ్మయ భవతి, మనము ఆ తండ్రి అనేటువంటి స్థానాన్ని కూడా ఈ కుమారుడు చేయడానికి అవకాశం ఉంటుంటాయి.
It's only then, as has been said, in Brahma with Brahmaiva Bhavati, when you become knowledgeable, then you become identical with knowledge itself. If you know and understand Brahman, you become Brahman yourself. So the children, by acquiring the qualities of God, can become God himself.
Karma deenini puraskarinchukoniye mana bharatiya samskruti yandu dvaita vishishta dvaita advaita aneetundi moodu marthamunu manam aasrinchu anadi kaalam nunchi vastunnam.
It is in this context that in our civilization, in our culture of India, we have been having three steps called Dvaita, Vishishta Advaita and Advaita.
Kanuka Vedanta Bharatiya Vedanta nandu Advaita anetundi ye reethiga untundado danine and the messenger of God ani oka Bible lo danni polchukoni cheptu vacharu.
What is contained and called Advaita, called Dvaita or dualism in Indian philosophy has been described in the Bible as I am the messenger of God.
I am the messenger of God ante tanu master idan messenger ee rendidikini rendu tattavulato chennatundi kabatte mana bharatiya vedantam nandu dvaitam ani pettu vacharu.
There is a duality here, there is a dualistic aspect here, messenger and God, there are two different aspects, therefore in our philosophy this has been called dvaita or dualism.
దీనికి మరింత కొంచెం సోపానమాయంగా శోభను కలిగించేటువంటి రీతిగా విశిష్టమైనటువంటి రీతిలో అర్థం చెప్పడం చేత దీన్ని విశిష్టాద్వైతాన్ని ఐ ఆమ్ ది సన్ ఆఫ్ గాడ్ అని చెప్పుకుంటూ వచ్చారు.
ఫ్రమ్ దిస్ స్టెప్ వి మూవ్ ఫార్వర్డ్ ఎ లిటిల్ అండ్ వి గివ్ ఇట్ సమ్ అమౌంట్ ఆఫ్ డిస్టింక్టివ్నెస్. దిస్ స్టెప్ హ్యాస్ బీన్ కాల్డ్ ఇన్ ఇండియన్ ఫిలాసఫీ యాజ్ క్వాలిఫైడ్ నాన్ డ్యువలిజం.
అయితే మెసెంజర్ కు సన్నుకు చాలా వ్యత్యాసం ఉంటుంటారు.
There is a great difference being a messenger and a son.
Messenger oka servant ga untaru, son ga right ga untaru, adhikaram ga untaru.
Messenger is like a servant, but if you refer to him as a son, son has got a right which is different from being a messenger.
కనుక ఈ విధమైన అధికారతత్వాన్ని కూడి ఉండటం చేతనే దీనికి విశిష్టాద్వైతము అని కూడా మన భారతీయ సంస్కృతి అందు తెలుపుతూ వచ్చారు.
In this aspect of being son of God, there is an amount of distinctiveness which is quite different from being a messenger. So, in our culture, this has been called qualified non-dualism.
కనుకమైనా ఈ పవిత్రమైనటువంటి గుణమందును అభివృద్ధి చేసుకోవటం చేత తండ్రి కుమారుడు ఇద్దరు ఒకటే అయ్యో ఫాదర్ ఆర్ వన్ అనేటువంటి దాన్ని అద్వైతం అనేటువంటి రీతి కింద పూర్తూ వచ్చారు.
Gradually, by recognizing this distinctiveness and this separatism which exists in dualism, the recognition of that and the removal of that has taken him further to a step where the two become one, that is the Advaita, and that is called the non-dualistic philosophy in our language.
Chalukha, manam andaram kuda dvaitam aneetundi sthanam nunchi vishishta dvaitam tho prayanam chesi tadwara akkadi nunchi advaitam aneetundi gamyamu cherukovataniki prati manavudu kuda adhikaravantudu taanu prayatnam kodunu chesi atti pavitramainatundi sthanamni pondalani aashisthunnaru.
The three steps are dualism, qualified non-dualism and non-dualism. All of us have the right to start with the first step of dualism, travel then to qualified non-dualism and ultimately reach the goal of non-dualism.
That was that very, you know, beautifully put clip of Swami way back in 1976. But so clearly and so beautifully Swami is, in fact, in just about 5 minutes, given that whole journey of this phenomenal personality, Jesus Christ.
Exactly. I felt, Prem, that our Christmas feast begins now. As far as the satsang is concerned, this is what is food for thought. And dear listeners, this is the food which we shall be trying to assimilate and digest throughout the remaining 45 minutes or so of this satsang. Swami says that Jesus began by saying he is the messenger of God. That part of the discourse clip we did not play, but it is there. Swami dilates in great detail on that, of how Jesus is the messenger of God. And then he moved on to say he is the son of God. And then finally he said, I and my father are one. That was his statement. And Swami equates this with the Sanatana Dharma philosophies of Dvaita, Vishishtadvaita and Advaita. This kind of unifying and stitching together, I think, is being done for the first time, and we are grateful to Swami for the same. And this will be the subject of the satsang today.
And how similar it is to what Swami would say about Hanuman, you know, because when Hanuman's one of the first major tasks he's given is to be the messenger of the Lord. You know, he goes to Lanka in search of Mother Sita. So he is actually in that stage of being a messenger of the Lord. He carries a message from Rama first to Mother Sita, and then when taken to the court of Ravana, he becomes the messenger by default. You know, he is one who has come from the camp of Rama. And when asked, who are you? He says, Dasoham Kosalendrasya.
Exactly. So, if we look like this, maybe we can progress and see through the life of Jesus Christ and of Hanuman himself, because both started off by saying, I am the messenger of God. Though Dasoham Kosalendrasya translates directly into I am the servant of the Lord, here also Swami says that when Jesus says I am the messenger of the Lord, it shows two things, that there is a master and a messenger. So while Hanuman said that Rama is my master, Kosalendra is the emperor of that kingdom. So that is why Hanuman says that he is my master who has sent me, and Jesus starts by saying I am the messenger of God. And, you know, this relationship that Jesus is a special child, Jesus is not like any ordinary person, gets established early in the childhood of Jesus itself. Of course, the birth of Jesus himself is a wonderful thing. We know this immaculate conception where Jesus was not a prasava, but a pravesha. It is seen, you know, in any avatar, when any descent is there, it is always by pravesha and not prasava. Whether we take Rama or Krishna, our dear Sai, our Swami, or Jesus, it is always an entry and not a conception.
Right. In fact, and you can see that similarity between some of the major incarnations which you have read. As you said, Jesus Christ, the story is of course very well known, of Immaculate Conception. And when we come to that of Lord Rama, he was not born off the loins of Dasharatha or his wives. In fact, they spend years without children.
In fact, Mother Mary, she is told by Angel Gabriel that you will be bearing the Son of God, and she is in fact pleasantly shocked, and she says, but I'm not married yet. It was at that point in time when she was just engaged to right. Joseph the carpenter.
And I think the Jewish tradition had that an engagement would last 1 year before the marriage happens.
Hmm.
So she was actually in that period of post-engagement and ready to be married.
It is almost as if this is a time that is set aside for the bride and groom to get to know each other well. But it would have been a kind of problematic situation for Mary, because Joseph gets to know that she is bearing a child, and he thinks of actually breaking the engagement. That is when Angel Gabriel appears to him also and says that it's your responsibility to protect and take care of the child, because it's a child of God that you will be fathering. And that is why immediately the wedding of Joseph and Mary takes place, and that's how Jesus is born. You know, as I said before, from his early childhood itself, Jesus showed that he was an extraordinary boy. It becomes evident when we talk about that episode at the temple when Jesus went missing.
Right. In fact, the interesting thing is, you know, when an incarnation comes, I think there is a difficult predicament with which the divinity descends, because at one point it has to show that the birth is special. The child has to reveal itself as a special birth, but at the same time runs the risk of being too special that people will not take the message of the life too seriously.
Yes.
Because what the message Jesus came to say, especially when he said that I am the messenger of God, there are other discourses where Swami reiterates that you have to understand that each one of you is a messenger of the Lord. You have to realize that you're as much a messenger of God as Jesus is. But because of the special way in which an incarnation happens, or the messenger arrives, or the prophet arrives, we tend to think that he's special or she's special, and we don't have to be like that person. But as I said, it was necessary for Jesus to do things where he showed that he came with wisdom which was way beyond his years and way beyond, you know, what he learned physically. And that was one episode that showed that, was when he was 12 years old and when he goes to the temple in Jerusalem.
One more point to add here is, as you said, they come embodied with the wisdom. We saw how Swami as little Satya already had the wisdom. But at the same time, you will not see them, you know, flaunting those powers or making life very easy for themselves. See, when you get money, the first thing you think of doing is to make your life comfortable. And then whatever is extra, you use that to possibly help others if you are selfless enough.
Right.
But with the Lord, I mean, you would assume that we will do the same if given special powers also. Even there's a movie that's made, you know, Ivan Almighty, or there's one more Almighty, I forgot.
Bruce Almighty.
Bruce Almighty. And when they're given the powers of God, you see, the first thing is myself first. First, they improve their own lives. And then they improve the lives of those who are near and dear to them. And finally, they think about the world at large, because the world doesn't concern me. It's almost like I first, all others next, and society last, you know, all others meaning the close ones. And the difference is when we look at Jesus as a boy, when we look at Swami as a child, as Satyam, they always placed God and society first, their relatives and close ones next, and themselves last. That is why, you know, Swami says, if you want true joy, J-O-Y, he'll say you have to place Jesus first, others next, yourself last. Same message is reiterated in his name also, S-A-I, Sai. S, Sai first, society first, A, all others next, I, myself last. See, that is the difference why they win hearts and get people to empathize with them. Because though they come with some special powers, they are also special in the sense they are not using it only for themselves. That is the aspect which inspires us. And as you said, now we'll go to that incident where it became very evident that Jesus is very special and also gave a very special message to mankind.
So I think even this episode, instead of we narrating it, we should play that clip where Swami himself is narrating this incident of what happens when Jesus was 12 years old. So dear listeners, we're going to play another clip now. This is from the Christmas discourse that Swami delivered in the year 1989.
Yudulaku pradhanamaina sthanamu Jerusalem.
Jerusalem is the most important place for Jews.
Akkada yudulandaru kodunu cheri అనేక విధములుగా ప్రార్థనలు జరుపుతుండేటువంటి వారు.
జూస్ యూస్ టు కాంగ్రిగేట్ దేర్ అండ్ ఆఫర్ దేర్ ప్రేయర్స్.
ఈ జీసస్ కు 12వ సంవత్సరం లోపల తల్లిదండ్రులు ఈ జెరూసలం పోలని ఆ కుమారుణ్ణి కూడా తీసుకుని వెళ్లారు.
వెన్ జీసస్ వాస్ 12 ఇయర్స్ ఓల్డ్ ద పేరెంట్స్ టుక్ జీసస్ టు జెరూసలం.
ఈ జెరూసలం లో పోయి అనేక వింతలు విచిత్రములు చూస్తూ ఆ వైభవాల లోపల కుమారుణ్ణి మర్చిపోయారు.
ది పేరెంట్స్ టుక్ దిస్ చైల్డ్ వైల్ అబ్జర్వింగ్ ఆల్ స్ట్రేంజ్ అండ్ వెరీ న్యూ థింగ్స్ ఇన్ జెరూసలం.
అనేక వేల మంది చేరినటువంటి గుంపుల లోపల ఈ జీసస్ తప్పించుకున్నాడు.
దేర్ వర్ హ్యూజ్ క్రౌడ్స్ అండ్ జీసస్ లాస్ట్ వే విత్ ది పేరెంట్స్.
తదుపరి ఈ మేరీ జోసెఫ్ ఇద్దరు కూడా చూచి తన కుమారుడు లేడని అనేక విధములుగా దుఃఖించి అనేక ప్రాంతములు వెతికారు.
మేరీ అండ్ జోసెఫ్ లుక్డ్ ఫర్ దేర్ సన్, నాట్ ఫైండింగ్ హిమ్ దేర్ దే వర్ వెరీ మచ్ వరీడ్. దే మేడ్ సర్చ్ ఇన్ ఆల్ డైరెక్షన్స్ టు ఫైండ్ అండ్ ట్రేస్.
ఎక్కడా కనిపించలేదు.
దే వర్ నాట్ ఏబుల్ టు ట్రేస్ హిమ్.
కడపటికి విసుగు చెంది దేవ మందిరంలో పోయి చూచేటప్పటికి అక్కడ ఒక మాస్టర్ ఈ బోధన చేస్తుండగా ఒక మూలను కూర్చొని జీసస్ చక్కగా శ్రద్ధాభక్తితో వింటున్నాడు.
ఇన్ దర్ సర్చ్ దే బికేమ్ డెస్పరేట్ అండ్ యాజ్ ద లాస్ట్ రిసార్ట్ దే వెంట్ ఇన్ టు ద టెంపుల్. దే ఫౌండ్ జీసస్ లిసనింగ్ కాన్సన్ట్రేటెడ్లీ టు ది ప్రీచింగ్స్ ఆఫ్ సమ్ మాస్టర్ ఇన్ ద టెంపుల్.
ఆ బాలుని చూచిన తక్షణమే తల్లి ఒకవైపున దుఃఖము ఒకవైపున ఆనందము రెండు కూడా చేరి కుమారుని కౌగిలించుకున్నది.
When the mother saw this child, she had a mixed feeling of joy and sorrow. She hugged him.
నీ కోసం అనేక విధములుగా వెతికి చాలా బాధపడ్డాము నాయన అని చెప్పింది.
Child, we searched for you in different places and we were put a lot of trouble.
అప్పుడు చెప్పాడు జీసస్, అమ్మా నేను నా తండ్రి దగ్గరనే క్షేమంగా ఉండినప్పుడు మీరు బాధపడవలసిన అవసరం ఏమిటి?
జీసస్ రిప్లైడ్ ది మదర్, డియర్ మదర్, when I am safe with my father, why should you be troubled at all?
ఇది దైవం యొక్క మందిరము.
This is a temple of God.
నా తండ్రి యొక్క ఇల్లు.
This is the home of my father.
ఆ ఇంటిలో ఎట్టి క్షేమమునకు నువ్వు కొరత ఉండదు.
There is no dearth for protection and safety in
అట్టి అమృతమయమైన అఖండమయమైన ఈ యొక్క మందిరమునందు నేను సుక్షేమంగానే ఉంటున్నాను.
I am totally safe in such a place which is known for immortality and safety and protection.
Anaga 12va samvatsaram nunchi kudanu ee Jesus chaala daivam yokka tattamunu shakti samarthyamulanu pedalaku chaatadame kaakunda taanu kudanu aacharinchi aanandinchi anubhavistu vachadu.
That means to say, right from the age of 12 Jesus was full of divine qualities and divine contemplation. He was also preaching right from that time about God.
తదుపరి ఇంటికి వెళ్లి తండ్రి వడ్రంగి పనిలో ఉండేటువంటి వాడు.
Then they went back to their home. Father was a carpenter.
తండ్రికి నిరంతరము కూడాను ఆ పని యందు సహాయం చేసి ఎన్నో విధములుగా తోడుగా ఉండేటువంటి వాడు.
He was helping father in doing a lot of work right from the young days.
You know, when we say messenger of God, what is the Lord's message that Jesus carries? As it becomes very clear when we hear this clip, it is not as if Jesus went about preaching and saying, this is what God wants you to do, this is what God wants you to do. When you say you're a messenger of God, you're supposed to live God's message. And that is exactly what Jesus did. I remember another discourse. I don't think we could get an audio clip of that discourse today, but Swami mentions another beautiful message that Jesus gave to his mother. He said, "Mother, you could not find me because you were searching outside. If you had only looked within, you would have found me." So you see, when he speaks also, the message is so subtle. Every word is so pregnant with message. When Swami narrated this in the discourse, you know, I was wondering, why couldn't Jesus say directly, you know, seek God within and not outside? that is when I asked this question to Professor H.J. Bhagya, you know, Bhagya sir from the MBA department. He narrated something very interesting. He said that Swami had told him that very rarely does God or avatar or men or God come and give direct instructions.
Mm-hmm.
Because the sin of disobeying a direct instruction is very immense. And so, only when you have proved yourself worthy and the Lord has absolutely no doubt that you will obey every word to the letter, will He have, you know, the confidence to come and give you a direct message. Because, again, this is not some special treatment. This is Swami's love, because He said, if He feels that there is a chance that you may disobey, He will purposely camouflage and disguise it as a subtle message, so that when you don't follow it, He can forgive you by saying, see, I packaged it subtly, I did not say directly, so it is not entirely His fault, it is my fault too. So, you know, that is how Bhagya sir put it. So, here also we can see, Jesus is giving the message very subtly. He says, you didn't find me because you searched for me outside. If you had searched for me within, you would have found me. And then Swami says how He went on to help His parents at home. And you know, just because He's born with special powers, He's been sent to earth with a mission, it is not as if He sat on a high throne and started commanding. He did what you and me will do. That is what actually moved us when we talked about Swami's story also. Being a messenger of the Lord does not mean donning robes and walking with a staff and sitting on a throne. It means leading the life in the perfect and ideal manner, being an ideal son, an ideal father, an ideal child, an ideal whatever. Being an ideal in whatever we do, that is what is meant by being a messenger of the Lord, and that is what Jesus was even from the tender age of 12.
And you know, that's the beautiful thing, because I'm reminded of a quote which Rabindranath Tagore used to say, you know, every child which is born brings with it the message that Lord has not lost hope with humanity yet.
Wow.
Because He would stop production otherwise. You know, and in a sense, that's what Swami is saying here, because He is saying that every one of you is a messenger of the Lord. But the difference between the messenger of the Lord that Jesus Christ was, and I think all of us are, is that that very thing, that message, He was not just carrying it. He was living that message. I mean, right now we are messengers of the Lord. We are speaking the message. You know, we are taking a discourse clip and we are playing it. We are as much a messenger of the Lord as much as this system is or this microphone is. Because we are just carrying the message. But Jesus said a true messenger of the Lord will live the message. You know, He will carry it in Himself. The message will not be a separate entity from Him. It will be a part of Him. And when you carry that message as part of you, I think the spontaneous thing would be that I am the son of the Lord. I am the son of the Master. And that is the second stage, because Swami is saying that even at the age of 12, He was already saying that I am the son of the Lord. This is my Father's home. So it was not a journey in the sense of, you know, He started with messenger of the Lord and slowly He realized that He is actually the son of the Lord. Though it is easier to picture it that way, Swami is saying that He came with all the wisdom. He was only unraveling it from within.
Exactly. And see the thing, Prem, you know, it makes so much of difference the way you say it. Here when Jesus is telling that I'm in my Father's house, I'm safe and secure, I don't know if anybody other than His parents heard Him, but even if they heard Him, I don't think they took offense. Because in the other time, you know, when He said that I'm the Son of God, many people seem to have got a little shocked. If you actually look at the two statements, this is my Father's house versus I am the Son of God, they mean the same thing. And yet, apparently, people get shocked when it is put that way. This is, of course, my own thoughts that I wish to share, which arose just 2 minutes now, back now, and it's just an inspiration. And see, for Jesus to say, I am the Son of God, and finally, Swami says that He said, I and my Father are one, that was needed to actually shake up mankind and shock them into the reality. That is what happened when Swami also said, I am Sai Baba. It shocked. But I feel again another subtle message over here, you know, the way we portray, the way we present it. See, as long as it is, I am in my Father's home, people don't raise eyebrows. The minute you say, I am the Son of God, people raise eyebrows. As long as the focus is on God, there is no much problem. The minute the focus is on oneself, the problem arises. So, I suddenly felt that this was a message that Jesus gave me at this instant, that when you believe, when you truly believe that you are just an instrument of the Lord, just ensure that your own ego never comes in. Of course, as I said again, it is not as if it is an egoistic statement by Jesus when he said, I am the Son of God. That is what people wrongly misconstrued. But that is a message for us as to how people can misconstrue things. Jesus, as you said, had to unravel stage by stage, and therefore he started off with, I am the messenger of God, and then when the time was ripe, when the blow had to be dealt, he said, I am the Son of God.
Right. And that was the second stage, and you know, Swami would often talk of this. In fact, I think in the same discourse which we played, Swami says that, what do you mean by when you say I am the Son of God? You know, when you say that I am the son of so-and-so, and you know, you refer to your parents, invariably you inherit a certain amount of traits of that person. You know, you have musicians who have sons who eventually become good musicians. You have very famous cricketers, and we expect that their sons should be good cricketers. And in fact, even worse, we have very astute politicians, and we kind of expect that the son of that politician must be a born leader. So we expect that a son or a daughter kind of inherits certain traits of their parent.
Those are the qualities or such.
Right.
If not those, if you look physically, there's 100% correlation. I mean, the eye color, the skin tones, whatever, the genetic composition, if we take it biologically, is 100% from either of the parent. So whatever is there in the child genetically has been 100% derived from the parent.
Right. And Swami goes on to say that when you say that I am the Son of God, what traits of divinity are you living with? What traits of divinity are you bringing forth into this earthly existence? And Swami would say, do you have the compassion of the Lord? Do you have the forbearance of the Lord? Do you have the equality of the Lord? And that is what Jesus said when he said, I was the Son of the Lord. And that period of life when he came back, you know, there was that short period when he was not in the midst of the society. He went away. Swami says that he goes and he actually spends that time in satsangam, in the company of those who are inquiring into the truth. And when he comes back, he actually shows this aspect of his life where he says, I am the Son of the Lord. Where he starts showing that he does not discriminate between the, you know, the lowly and those who are well off. And that is a period when he lives that I am the Son of the Lord message.
And Swami says the Sanatana Dharma equivalent of that is Shrunvantu Vishve Amrutasya Putra. We are the sons of immortality. Immortality is nothing but God or the ultimate divine. And as you rightly said, if we have to be children of God, we definitely need to show all the qualities that God exhibited. Maybe to a lesser intensity, but definitely all have to be shown. And it is only when we start living this, can we confidently and with conviction call ourselves as children of God. And because most of us, most of the time, don't do it, we not only are unable to imagine a divine ancestry for ourselves, we are also shocked at anyone else who claims that divine ancestry. And that is what happens when Jesus goes and sees that the house of his father, that is the temple of God, has been transformed into a business place. When he sees that, he gets infuriated. He takes out a whip and whips away all the stalls over there. And he says, don't change the house of my father into a gambling den, a business house. Don't do this. This is not what it is meant for. And at that time they ask, what do you mean you're saying? What right do you have to do this? He says, I have a right because this is my father's house. You know, when they ask, what do you think this is? He says, this is my father's house. You know, in Indian languages we often ask, why are you doing, is this your father's property? If somebody had asked that to Jesus, he would have said, yes, this is my father's property. And so therefore it is mine. And again, you know, we are actually going to different points in Jesus' life, from the point when he was a 12-year-old to the point when this episode happens. Jesus has lived a life which shows why he is the Son of God. As Swami says, he has displayed so much empathy, so much compassion, so much of love, so much of adherence to truth, all this, and therefore he has the conviction to say that this is my father's house. I think again, this episode also, Swami has narrated in great detail, but the most magical moment here is when they say, they ask him, you know, the high priest there and the people there who are actually like many of us who do not believe in a divine ancestry and also doubt those who claim a divine ancestry.
Right.
They say, how on earth can you say this is your father's house? And then Jesus says, see, here he's again becoming a messenger of the Lord. So as you said, it is not as if it's a stage like grade 1, grade 2, grade 3. All three are there every time, but it shows, you know, it shows that gradual stage of unraveling
right. His
own self. So here he sends out a message. He says, break down this temple and I will build it back in 3 days. And the people are shocked. They say it took 46 years to build this temple. And Jesus is just silent. It's almost as if he's daring them. If you can, break it down. I will build it up in 3 days. But there again is such a subtle hidden message.
Right. That is when he says, you break it down and build it in 3 days. Where they think that how can this temple be built in 3 days? They say, you know, it took 40, 50 years for us to build it. And he claims that he can build it in 3 days. But it is much later that they realize that he was actually referring to his own body. And how many times Swami has said, no deho devale aprokto,
jivo bhuta
sanatana. He says this body is actually the temple of the Lord. And that was what Jesus was referring to. He says, you bring to dust this temple of the Lord. I will rebuild it in 3 days. And that's what happens much later when that resurrection of Christ happens on Easter Sunday when, you know, Christ comes back. That is what he's referring to. And again, you know, the message also was very clear here that he's saying that this body is a container of the divine, almost slowly edging from, as Swami beautifully put it, from Vishishta Dvaita to Advaita, saying that you really are one with the Lord.
Swami says that Dvaita is where you see absolute difference. He is the master, I am the messenger. And Vishishta Dvaita is, definitely there is a difference, but there is a special relationship. Vishishta, that is the speciality. And that is what Jesus...
It's a qualified non-duality.
Yes, he shows that I am the son of God. It's not as if that he is some master and I am just a servant or a messenger. Yes, I am definitely under him, but there is a relationship that exists between him and me, and that is of divine parentage. He is my father and I am the son. And as you said here, you know, deho devalaya prokto jiva bhuta sanatana. The second line states that while the first line states that the body is the temple of God, the second line states that the indweller is sanatana or eternal. And Jesus here is now preparing the world to receive the message that I am actually that indweller who is eternal. And how can something that is eternal be anything other than God? Because only God is eternal. And, you know, later on, even when the Last Supper takes place, as Jesus is breaking the bread and serving the wine, he says, this is my body, this is my blood. Again, very subtly hinting that when I say this is my body, when I say this is my blood, it shows that it is something that I possess, something that I own. It is not me. My body is not me. But just like in Swami's life, in Jesus' life too, we have to be very alert and careful in order to catch these sentences pregnant with meaning.
Talking of Jesus saying that I am the Son of God, and we spoke of inheriting, we started off by, you know, juxtaposing the life of Hanuman. You know, there's that very interesting point in Sundarakhandam. They say, in the entire Ramayana, as we know, it's divided into so many khandas, Sundarakhandam is supposed to be the only part in the Ramayana where Rama does not have any role at all. Entire Sundarakhanda is about Hanuman's employees and exploits in Lanka, and the protagonist or the hero of the play has no role in that particular canto. And that is why they say that Rama might not be in that whole khanda, but throughout that khanda he is present through the acts of Hanuman. Because at every point Hanuman asks himself, if my Lord was here, what he would have done? You know, how he would have treated this person, how he would have treated that person. Vibhishana is a pious person, how Rama would have treated him. You know, Sita is there, how Sita would have been treated by Rama. So they say that, you know, throughout that Sundarakanda, Hanuman lived like how Rama would have lived.
And you know, Prem, I think this is a very apt point to remind our listeners that whenever a Saptaham has to be done on the Ramayana is a very long story. And sometimes it's not possible to complete the narrative of the entire Ramayana within a week. So instead of doing the entire Ramayana, they decide to do only one canto of the Ramayana. And you know what? The canto that they pick up to dilate upon is always the Sundarakanda. They say that if you cannot do the entire Ramayana, but want to get the gist of the entire Ramayana, get love for the Lord, get devotion for the Lord and understand who Rama is, do only Sundarakandam. And as you pointed out, in Sundarakandam, Rama, the physical entity, does not occur even once at all. So again, you know, that is such a message saying that an enlightened soul, a person who has realized his reality, is no different from the Lord. And that is why reading only about Hanuman is equal to reading about Rama, because as Hanuman later on says, you know, when he is asked for an introduction by Ravana, he says, who are you? He says, at the level of the body, I am the servant of Rama. That is what he says, Dasoham Kosalendrasya. Again, this is something that Swami has revealed in a discourse. And he says, at the level of the mind, I am a spark of the divine that Rama is. You know, Aham Kosalendrasya. That is just a part of that, which means Aham meaning I, Kosalendrasya is belong to Rama. So I am a spark of Rama. And he says, at the level of Atma, in the ultimate level, so from the Dasoham Kosalendrasya, he drops the Da and Kosalendrasya and he says, Soham, I am he. So at the level of the body, I am the messenger and servant of my Lord. At the level of the mind, I am a spark of the Lord. In fact, Swami in a discourse says that the mind is the child of Atma.
Right.
And therefore, that is what Jesus says, I am the son of God. And finally, Soham means I am that. And that is what Jesus also says, I and my Father are one. That is the level of the Atma. So, it is so beautiful. I mean, as you said, you juxtaposed Hanuman, the Ramayana with the story of Jesus, and it is so thrilling and so beautiful and gives rise to so many such beautiful, noble thoughts.
And as we started, you know, there were a few messages of Jesus which have been taken well, but there were some messages of Jesus Christ which were not taken well. And I think the final message which Jesus gave, which was that of Advaita, as Swami would say, he said, I and my Lord are one and cannot be separated. I think many people could not take that. That is the beauty of perspective. You know, when Jesus said that I and my Lord are one, he would have told it, as Swami tells in another discourse, as a drop which fell in an ocean. He says, I don't have an individual existence of my own. I am one with my master. You know, that was the highest level of egolessness, where he says that I've dissolved myself in that ocean that my Lord is. But when you see it from the perspective of one who is egoistic, as many of these false priests of the, you know, that who were living in that period in Jerusalem, they felt that here is one man, an individual, who's claiming to be God. But in fact, Jesus was saying that, you know, that where that Koham has dissolved in Soham. That was a level from which Jesus was addressing himself. But these people who are egoistic, who are trying to claim importance in the society by saying that we are a priest, you know, we are the ones who give you the message of the Lord. When they saw it, they felt that here is an individual who is trying to raise himself to the level of the Lord, and that is blasphemy and he needs to be punished.
Exactly. In fact, you know, here is an account that I have picked from John, the book of John.
Okay.
It says, Jesus was in the temple walking up and down the portico of Solomon. Mm-hmm. It was a feast of dedication in Jerusalem. Someone among the crowd asked him, are you the Christ? Jesus replied, the Father and I are one. Now I think this is John 10:30.
Okay.
Hearing this, some of the people picked up stones to throw at him. Jesus asked them, I have shown many works from my Father. For which of these are you stoning me? John 10:32. We are stoning you not for doing a good work, they replied, but for blasphemy. Though you are only a man, you claim to be a God. John 10:33. Jesus answered them, is it not written in your law, I have said you are gods? John 10:34. If he called them gods to whom the word of God came, and scripture cannot be set aside. John 10:35. Why then do you say you are blaspheming because I said I am God? Truly I am God and you too are God. And you know, the actual words, according to the King James version of the Bible, which is highly revered,
okay,
it was printed in 1839, I believe. The actual words, according to that, are, "Thou blasphemest, because I said, I am the Son of God. If I do not the works of my Father, believe me not. But if I do, though ye believe not me, believe the works, that ye may know and believe that the Father is in me and I in him." These are the words according to that. So, this is what happened when finally he actually said, "I and my Father are one." People threw stones at him. You know, there's this documentary called The Inconvenient Truth, which speaks about global warming and pollution, but I feel this is the actual inconvenient truth. Through the ages we have seen, whenever any master speaks out the ultimate truth for one and all to hear and believe, we cast stones at them. And that was what happened to Jesus also. The people who were ready to accept his miracles and accept the bounties that he conferred picked up stones to throw at him when he said, "I and my Father are one."
You know, that's the saddest thing. And what a beautiful correlation this is, you know, when Swami said, this is our journey. That is the beauty of Swami's message too. You know, he doesn't allow us to separate us from something and worship it. If you worship it, the journey of that worship should result in you being one with that person you're worshiping. You know, that's the same thing with Jesus Christ too. You know, don't stop with worshiping him. That is what we do. You know, when the messenger comes with a message, we take the message, put it aside and worship the messenger and forget the message and the messenger. But Swami is saying that you become one with the message and the messenger. You know, that's the ultimate thing of Advaita. When Swami speaks about meditation, Swami says, the one who meditates, the one which is being meditated upon, and the act of meditation becomes one. Mm. In fact, that is what Swami is saying here. You know, here is the message, here is the messenger, and you're the one who is receiving it. The time when all these three unite to become one, then you've made use of the message and the messenger.
And Prem, if you look at the lives of all these masters, as of now we are talking about Swami and Jesus, you know, it is as if in order to drill down this message into our thick skulls, or possibly heart that has been covered with years and years of accumulated karma or whatsoever, they subject their own bodies to such great pains in order to drill down that experience in our head that I am not the body. And that is why Jesus also subjected himself to the crucifixion. He has said that I am not this body. Who I am? He started off with saying, I am the messenger of God, I am the Son of God, and finally, I and my Father are one. So if I am one with my Father, nothing will ever affect me. And when this is just stated in words, it might not make the impact. And therefore, is this twin drama of crucifixion and resurrection. By crucifixion, I feel Jesus showed that I am not this body and mind that you think I am. And with the resurrection, he showed, you know, I am not the body, I am not the mind, this is what I am. The crucifixion showed what Jesus is not, the resurrection showed what Jesus is. And that is a message for all of us to imbibe in our lives, that I am not the body, I am not the mind, I am the Atma. I am not the body possessing a soul, I am the soul possessing a body.
And very true. In fact, if you look at many of the saints which we have studied, we have observed, be it Ramana Maharishi, be it Ramakrishna Paramahamsa's. In Ramana Maharishi, he's supposed to have suffered with a severe cancer, which was kind of eating into his flesh and bones. And somebody would come and ask him, you know, Bhagwan, is it hurting you? Is it paining? He would say, it is paining for the body.
Hmm.
You know, even at that state, even in the level of words and thoughts, he always separated himself from that body. He said, it hurts the body, it doesn't hurt me. And one of the commentators on Bhagwan Ramana Maharishi's life, he says that maybe that period of time when he went through physical pain was so essential for his disciples to understand that he really meant when he said he's not the body. He really meant when he was trying to teach his disciples that you're not the body. And very similarly, you know, Jesus Christ, all through his life, he said he was teaching the value of forbearance. He was teaching the value of forgiveness. And that was a very important moment when he could live that message. Because when he was put, he says, there is that episode where he kind of he goes and prays to the Lord and he says, I submit myself to your will. It was a moment in his life to show that total surrender. And when he was put on the cross, when he was being flogged and when he was being ill-treated so badly, he had the forbearance to say that, forgive them, Lord, they don't know what they do. Because, you know, that was a moment in his life when he could give that living message. It was no more words, but it was life into those words.
Exactly, Prem. And as you were speaking of Bhagwan Ramana, I was also reminded of our own Bhagwan. When throughout he has been saying he is not the body, and in fact when people ask him, are you God? His response has always been, I am God, but if you dwell within yourselves, you will realize that you too are God. When he says, I am not the body, a hip fracture, breaking the hip is no mean thing, and he never got it fixed. And throughout, in fact, when you said that Bhagwan Ramana said that the body is in pain, I am reminded of an episode that took place between Professor Anil Kumar and Swami. When he said, Swami, it must be paining a lot. Swami said, oh yes, so much of pain. Then Professor Anil Kumar sir said, you know, he said, Swami, why do you suffer so much? Then Swami said, hey, correction. There is a lot of pain, but there is no suffering. Because pain is for the body. Yes, that pain is there. But suffering, I never suffer. I mean, this was left unsaid, but it is evident that that is because I am not the body. And you know, there are so many similarities, Prem, between, you know, how, as you said, towards the end, it looks as if every master, every avatar, every advent undergoes through so much to show that, you know, throughout you have grown in your love for me because you think this is me. But yes, your love is permanent, but this is not me. As if to reinforce the message, they have all suffered. But there's one more, you know, one more common thing I found between Jesus and Swami, you know. The last, the final supper. You know what Jesus does after the final supper? He gets down and start washing the feet of all his apostles, all his disciples. At that time they were disciples, later they became the apostles. But he washed their feet and they were like, no master, my Lord, you should not do this. We should wash your feet. But he says, no. There is no difference whether you wash my feet. This is again left unsaid, but it is almost as if Jesus sees no difference in them washing his feet or him washing their feet. And if we look at what can possibly be an equivalent of the final supper for Swami, possibly the last few darshans that he gave, what did Swami do? He raised his hands and prostrated to everyone who had assembled in the hall. And all of us were shocked. In fact, I remember I was told, don't publish this photograph for a while. Don't publish this because this is something strange. Because all our life we are used to seeing people prostrate before Bhagwan. How can Bhagwan prostrate to people? I feel just on a quantity scale it was much larger, that's all, the number of people assembled. But the same shock that the disciples of Christ felt, that was the same shock that even everybody felt. But what can be done? That is the ultimate message that a man of God or God always delivers.
Very true. And you know, that was the beauty when we started. We said we all are messengers of the Lord. But what made this messenger of the Lord so special? And that is what we all should strive for. You know, it's not like you look at him, glorify him and extol him and then forget about it. This is also the message. When you take the message and you live the message. Because the message is useless if it is not lived. You know, that's the beauty of the thing. So if we live that message, as Swami say, we all become the messenger of the Lord who have internalized this message and will eventually claim with full rights that I am the son of the Lord and with, you know, with all the confidence say that I and my master are one and the same.
Exactly. You know, we have great love for Jesus. There are so many of us who swear by Jesus and want to live our life for him. But I feel, Prem, that often we stop at the first level, if we can call it that way, that we feel we are all messengers of Christ. We want to convey the message of Christ and want to tell everyone that he will bring healing. Christ will bring healing. But as Swami says in his discourse, we are not ready to go to the next stage where we ourselves are able to bring healing and peace and love to the world. Because when we actually have such confidence that we are all messengers of Christ, it's only a matter of time before we start feeling like the children of Christ. We are all the children of God. You know, the brotherhood of man and the fatherhood of God, we'll all feel like the children of Christ. We should feel like I am the son of Jesus, I am the daughter of Jesus. And finally, move to realizing the unity. Just as Jesus proclaimed his unity with the Lord, if we feel Jesus is our Lord, then shouldn't we too move to a level so that we are also able to proclaim our unity with Jesus? I think this is the message that Christmas should give us. This is the message that we should carry home from Christmas, because Christmas is often celebrated as the birth of Jesus. That is just the beginning of the journey, because when we say the birth of Jesus, we identify Jesus as that baby boy, that little baby that was born. But if we think that is Jesus, then Jesus is dead today, right? But no, Jesus is alive today. In fact, I remember today morning there was that carol that was sung, Jesus is alive today. So Jesus is alive today, then what is Jesus? And that is answered by Jesus in his own life, the messenger of God, the Son of God, God himself. So that is the evolution that each and every one of us must start putting efforts to undertake. And I think that would be a wonderful Christmas gift that we can give Jesus.
So that, dear listeners, is the beautiful understanding that Swami drives us all to. And when we go through Swami's discourses, as we said, you know, the festival is not complete just with the festivities and with the wonderful food that we have. But the feast is complete when the message is taken. And Swami, so beautifully in that first clip which we played, you know, when you understand the message completely, when you have knowledge, when you become knowledgeable, you become one with the knowledge. You know, Brahmavid Brahmaiva Bhavati. Where is the diversity and they talk of in religion? Doesn't every religion say the same message? Doesn't every prophet who came down give the same message? It is just that, you know, sometimes we don't see it. And another master has to come and say that it was after all the same message.
Apart from not seeing it, we start seeing it in the wrong way.
Right.
Just as some of the priests saw Jesus' statement of ultimate truth as a statement of audacity. So dear listeners, we come to the end of this satsang. As always, offer it at the lotus feet of our dear Swami, at the lotus feet of beloved Jesus Christ, and pray to him that may this day be the dawn of a new life, when we are able to spend every moment of our life with the Spirit of Christ, with the Spirit of Sai. And the Spirit of Christ and the Spirit of Sai is neatly packed in that one message where Swami says, if you want joy, place Jesus first, place others next, and yourself last. It is only in selflessness and service and love that we find joy. That is why Swami said, na karmana na prajaya dhanena tyage naike amritatva manushu. It is that sacrifice and selflessness alone that gives us amritatva, or immortality, or the realization of our oneness with the Lord. With that, dear listeners, we bring the satsang to a close. Here is a wonderful Christmas song for all of you to hear and enjoy. Thank you. Jai Sai Ram.
Beyond the brave. his love, and his gospel is peace. Chains shall he break, for the slave is our brother, and in his name all oppression shall cease. Sweet hymns of joy in grateful chorus raise we, let all within us praise his glorious name. Christ is the Lord. Oh, praise his name forever. His power and glory evermore proclaim.
Sairam, you just heard an episode of our radio series Afternoon Satsang. This is a live discussion between Radio Sai's Prem and Arvind on different spiritual topics, and today's episode was first featured as part of Radio Sai's Thursday Live at 12:30 p.m. on 25th December 2014. You can mail us your comments and feedback to listener@radiosai.org. Thank you, and Sairam from Prashanthi Nilayam.